Hello, everybody. It's Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. The reason why I call it The One is because I'm always looking for people that don't fit anywhere else, that they are one individual, that they are just not, I wouldn't say they're abnormal. I just would say that they're unique and different. This next guest is definitely one of those people. I've been following Charles Fleischer for a long time, ever since he was Carvelli, which was Vinnie Barbarino's nemesis in Welcome Back, Kotter. He was awesome then, and he's awesome now. You probably, if you were, you know, a kid in the 90s, he was the voice of Roger Rabbit. Recently, I guess it's not that recent, but for me, one of the most memorable characters in one of my favorite movies of all time, Zodiac, was Bob Vaughn. It's a short scene. It takes place in a house, and Jake Gyllenhaal goes in there, and it is so freaky and spooky, mainly because of the actor playing Bob Vaughn, who was Charles Fleischer, just made your skin crawl. And anyway, Charles, how are you?
Thank you very much. What a nice introduction. I'm excellent. And The One, as in singularity, and The One also as in to win and having won. I think that's a good juxtaposition for opposition of juxta.
You know who hooked us up? The original Buffy, the vampire slayer, who you were in a movie with her deadly friend. You were the voice of BB. And I mentioned that. She says, oh, I know Charlie. He's a great guy. And I go, oh, man, I got to have him on my podcast.
Yeah, we did another movie together. I see her at a lot of Comic-Con kind of things. Very wonderful human being.
Mm-hmm. You know, I saw you recently. Again, this is another thing that is unusual about you because you were considered a comedian and an actor. You also did a TED Talk, and I found it very entertaining. But I have to admit, a lot of it went over my head. I'm interested in the mathematical universe, but you just raced way beyond my capacity to keep up. Can you explain to me? You have an interesting theory about the universe, if I remember correctly. Could you summarize it in a way that a low IQ person like me would understand?
Well, firstly, I will respectfully disagree with your low IQ evaluation. you don't get TV shows, podcasts, and essentially wonderful gifts with that some kind of higher IQ. But one of my theories is this mathematical concept that I call MOLIES.
Right.
Which, everything in the universe is, there's a numerical constant, everything from pi to the spin of an electron. So if all these things are based on specific numbers, that if they change, things kind of go away, it seemed logical to me that you could kind of reverse engineer numbers and come up with something that would be like the DNA of the universe.
Right.
Some primary abstract concept that would, you know, allow you to have a better understanding of everything.
You know, I think I came across a website that you had put up, and I thought, you know, this is out of, like, you know, left field. But there are a lot of people that are kind of coming to the conclusion that basically, you know, the universe is a product of math. It's just an equation of some kind. Right?
Well, everything can be kind of reduced to numbers. And what are numbers? Are numbers something that man just invented, or something that we discovered? And, you know, words, which are extraordinary, especially if you're in the business of communication, there's only so many letters and so many words.
Mm-hmm.
And you could make up a new word, put gudrubakawanga. I could even spell it, but it has no meaning. But you can just pick any number, like as many digits as you want, and that's out there. That's like you can list the numbers, says, I'm here, present, you know, 9,000,000,000, here. You can add one to that. You can pick out the prime numbers. It's just, I've always found it really fascinating and inspirational, and a field that seem to be ripe for discovery.
Yeah, you know what? I can't remember the book I read. Maybe it was – I think it might have been called Mathematical Universe. It was a guy named Tegmark. I might be wrong. But there was something that – when you think about numbers, it freaks you out. Like the idea that they're the same number of odd numbers as there are whole numbers. Because with infinity, it just doesn't matter, right?
You're talking about Max Tegmark.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, well, there's Well, Cantor came up with this mathematical proof, which was disputed, that the number of whole numbers and the number of real numbers, those are both infinite groups, yet one group is bigger than the other, which is kind of a mind-boggling way. If they're infinite, how could one be bigger?
Right.
And he had a valid proof, but it took other scientists a while before they said, you know, he was right. I can't believe it. He went nuts, but he was right. And after, pondering that concept, it occurred to me the concept of infinity, and is the universe where we are presently residing, is it infinite or finite?
Mm-hmm.
I subscribe to the idea that it is finite.
Really?
Well, I think infinity deals more with quantity than actual mass. However, to put it back into the mind-blown category, this universe is finite, but there are an infinite number of finite universes.
Right. So there's like... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Listen, that's a nutty thing. Infinite number of finite amount. Just, you know, one universe is crazy enough.
It is. But you know what? You're not the only person who thinks that way. I mean, there's a lot of... you hear about people talking about quantum universes and that there are universes that might be all around us. Back to your point about the idea of numbers... And then I want to talk about the finite and infinite universe. The idea that, like, there are infinite numbers in between numbers. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you get between number one and number two, there's an infinite number of numbers between them, right?
It's pretty nutty. it's like, wow, it's too much for most people at any time of the day,
yeah.
You know, whether you've had a drink or whatever. But I think it's important to challenge the mind and to just think about things that are unthinkable and that can only be conjured by the mind. I mean, you can't necessarily use your five senses to perceive any of these wonders, yet the human mind is capable of understanding and things that are beyond the realm of understanding, which is pretty amazing.
Well, you know, I remember when I was a kid, you talk about how the mind – is limited in somehow pondering things, or you can feel the limitation when you ponder something. I remember as a kid, like when, you know, my mother would tell me about heaven and she would say, you live forever. And I was like, the idea of forever just freaked me out. I didn't understand what forever means. And that feeling that you get when somebody explains a concept of like infinite parallel universes, something that just keeps going on, or time itself keep going on. What is that sensation that it creates in your head that it's almost like a mania because you can't figure it out?
Exactly. But as far as forever, this universe eventually will reach a point where it's over, where it stops.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a couple weeks to do stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, there will be a point when it happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like mathematics, you know, they are sort of better if you're talking about them. You have like if you're talking more in a German accent, you know, the protons, electrons, and neutrons, it just sounds more credible than if you're saying, you know, protons and croutons. But if you want to sue somebody or tell them about supper, this voice works much better for that. You know, we're having some time. Sit down, Jeremy. Look, it's going to be better. It's like, you'll sit down. I understand. So it depends on the tonality, the verbosity to accentuate the calamity.
Do you have conversations with yourself in different voices? Because I know that you can.
Well, you know that I do. And I'm almost embarrassed to say it. I've never called myself up on another phone and had a conversation with myself that way. I think that's a line I don't want to cross. But, you know, definitely I'll talk to myself in some way. Mm-hmm. And even just being entertaining and saying, dude, what are you doing? No, it's not about that. It's about thinking. You go to approach it differently.
You were Roger Rabbit, and they never made another Roger Rabbit. Why was it? Was it because it was just too expensive or difficult?
I would say it was political as us in studio politics. The movie was originally produced by Disney and Amblin. So that's Spielberg and the whole Disney conglomeration. And then Jeffrey Katzenberg moved over with Spielberg. And that was back when Eisner was in control and there was, you know, kind of animosity. And just the fact that it was split between two different studios, you had to get the both rights. And also, I guess they never just came up with the right idea. There were a lot of things pitched. But, you know, the combination of people, Bob Zemeckis and Richard Williams, the director of animation, that was a pretty amazing team.
Yeah, and it
but
was...
I wouldn't mind if they did another one. I would be more than delighted to do that.
It was such a breakthrough. I mean, when it happened, I mean, it was really probably one of the most talked about theatrical releases. I remember, you know, growing up, what a big deal it was and going to the theater and seeing it. I want to ask you, is there one mystery of the universe? If you could pick a mystery of the universe that you could have the answer for, what would it be?
Oh, it would be why Monday comes after Sunday.
That's a good one.
It's good. But, you know, the weeks are named after a different celestial body. Sunday's the sun, Monday's the moon, Tuesday, Mars, Wednesday, Mercury. But as far as one serious question that I would ask, I would ask for more questions.
Yes.
Because, you know, I guess I would want to know the story of the beginning.
How do you think it began?
Well, you know, the Big Bang, they said this happened. But if you look at nature, things come about usually because of two other beings uniting and creating the offspring. So, hypothetically, maybe this universe was the result of two other universes hooking up.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And it makes the Big Bang sound a little more alluring.
It does. Literally was a Big Bang. You know,
Big Bang, yeah, it was tremendous.
Do you know, when you think about infinite parallel universes, does that mean if there's an infinite number of universes, does that mean that you could be anything and everything? Like in this universe, you're Charles Fleischer, but in another universe, you're, I don't know, a kangaroo. In another universe, you're, I don't know, George Clooney. Do you know what I mean? It's like if there's an infinite number of universes, then there's an infinite number of your consciousness in different as different beings. Would that make
sense?
That's
certainly one possibility where I wouldn't have to be a kangaroo, but in a parallel universe now, I'm talking to Sam Bickman on the Sam Bickman Show.
Right.
And in another one, I refuse to do this because I don't do podcasts.
That's very good.
And in another one, I'm interviewing myself because I'm the only person. Well, that subscribes to the idea that, you know, each universe is somehow similar but slightly skewed, where it could be, you know, whatever you want to imagine or beyond the realm of our imagination, where it's not even human-like or not dimensions that we are aware of or alien beings or, you know.
Do you believe in that?
Or imagination.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you go. I was anticipating your question about aliens.
Yeah, I was almost going to say that the alien, there's a theory that we don't see aliens because non-conscious thinking machines have already taken over those planets the way they're going to take over Earth. Like we're just, you know, AI becomes so powerful and, you know, reaches its that point where we're like barnyard animals to them and they take over the planet. And the reason why we haven't seen or communicated with other forms of life is because that's already happened on other planets. They're just run by non-thinking consciousness machines. Have you heard of that? Am I even explaining it well? I'm not even sure I am.
You know, I understand exactly what you mean. If that was the case, where it was all AI, there would still be some kind of a fingerprint of their existence. So I think that there's definitely other forms of consciousness out there, and it could be that we don't see them because of just the distance or just how time unfolds for us. And, you know, and 10,000 years for us could be instantaneous. But I do think there's definitely extraterrestrial intelligence, and it's just a matter of time before we connect with it in some way.
Yeah, I hope I'm around for that. Do you, how long do you think we'll ever be able to conquer mortality?
Well, I think, as I said before, that even the universe will eventually end. But if you're really clever, and this universe ends, and you know universe bridge mechanics, and you're able to go to another universe, and you could keep popping around.
Yes.
Sure, that you could go on for a while, but I do think that everything begins and ends. But it's a cycle, you know, where the end is yet another beginning.
See, I keep.
But if you're talking about just human mortality, I think George Clooney's on his way to that.
You know, I keep thinking that it'll be in a certain period of time, our heads will just be in a vat of nutrients. And that's how we will survive to, like once you're about 80, you just kind of, like, get out of the body and you're put in a vat for another 80 or 90 years. And you just sit there like you're on a shelf and you've already paid for, you know, the help to come in and make sure you're getting the right nutrients. That's what I'm looking for.
Metaphorically, a lot of people live their lives like that now.
Yes, that's true. You
know, they're in the vat, and some people won't go for that vat. That's just not where it's at.
What do you work? What do you work? Before we wrap this up, I want to know, what are you working on now? Where can people find you and learn more about Charles Fleischer and where they can see you?
Oh, I'll be in at the Las Vegas Laugh Factory the middle of October, and that's my next Vegas appearance. And you can just, you know, seek me out. They have Google.
Yes, they do.
And other inventions that are useful for determining location and provocation of vocation.
Yeah, people have to understand. You're a comedian. You're not only just brilliant with voices and do a lot of animation, a lot of cartoon voices and work, but you're out there on the road performing. So if people want to see you, they can see you. And I think that's important to note, that you're just not acting and doing voices, but you're out there performing, which is a tough thing, you know.
I love doing stand-up. You know, people often ask me, you know, well, you do a lot of different things. What do you like the most? And I usually respond, whatever I'm doing at the moment. But definitely stand-up is something that I enjoy for many reasons, just the whole theatrical live aspect of it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, making films is extraordinary, too, because that team work involves this whole group of people, and it's all for that moment that's captured. You know, they're all magical endeavors. You know, any chance to do something where you can change someone's life. You know, you make a joke, you do something funny, even if it's something that is very spiritual or metaphysical or about gamma ray bursts or molies or whatever. It's all about trying to help the next generation.
You remind me so much of Frank Gorshin at times. Do you remember Frank Gorshin?
Frank Gorshin, didn't he play the Riddler on the Batman?
Yes. He was an amazing impersonator. I just remember him as a kid. You always kind of reminded me a little bit of him. I always thought that he was really funny and talented. If people want to find you, if you want to see something interesting, the TED Talk you did. So if you Google Charles Fleischer and TED Talk, you'll be entertained for, like, it's a good 20 minutes, I think, if I remember. It was really funny. And you go over your mathematical theories, but you're also doing it in a stand-up way, which I don't think I've seen before.
Thank you very much. That's, I enjoy both of those constructs, and to be able to make people laugh and also provide them with information. And seeing people's different reactions, some people think it's all just a goof, or it's all just science, or it's a parody. But I think any artist that puts something out there, there's going to be different interpretations, which is It's fine. It's part of the art.
Yeah.
But as far as Frank Gorshin, thank you very much. That's a compliment.
Yeah.
He was very good. Excellent impressionist. He definitely was one of the few that could do a lot of different voices. And he always had a nice thing. He was very thin.
Yes. Yes. He had an amazing laugh. I just remember the Riddler laugh was – by the way, that was just a great series. Batman had so many amazing actors. But that's for another time. Charles, a pleasure talking to you.
Hey, Double G, you're an amazing guy yourself. Now, we didn't get into you at all. But, maybe next.
Thank God for that. There's a lot of dark secrets in there. Yeah, that'll we'll do that some other time. I hope when you get out to New York sometime, you got to do my show. That would be awesome.
I would be more than delighted to participate in any venture with you, my brother.
All right. Thank you so much, Charles. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Greg.